I'll start off with something that you haven't got in front of you. Just touching a bit more on the wintering. We'd had some feedback prior to coming here today, and also it was evident in the submissions that we watched before we presented that the question about appropriate limits was something for winter grazing, was something that you were interested in.
Yep.
So I'd just like to comment on that. I'd endorse what Daryl says, that a percentage would be far more acceptable than the limit that's imposed at the moment, would be fairer for farmers. But actually what we submitted was that no limitation is actually appropriate, because the cows need fed, and if you limit what one farmer can feed, then you just move the cows somewhere else. So it doesn't actually change the totality of what's going on. In addition, any threshold discourages innovation and promotes bad practice. So for example, spreading cows out on a larger area will provide better outcomes. So if you provide a limit, you're just forcing farmers into a place where they may, for example, grow higher yielding crops, throw on more supplement feed, those kinds of things, which will have a much worse outcome on water quality than if you took the area limits away and allow farmers to do it the best way they can. So Federated Farmers' submission was not to impose an area limit on winter grazing, but instead to enforce good management practices. And there's a number of good management practices that we know have really good outcomes. So I just wanted to touch on that. In terms of the written material that you have got from me, have you found that in the pack that you were given?
Yeah, and just ideally that would have been pre-circulated. We did request all evidence to be pre-circulated.
Sorry, the appendix
end, sorry. Well, I'm talking about your brief of evidence. Is it brief of evidence of Bernadette Allen Hunt?
That's it.
Yeah, yes. Ideally that would have been pre-circulated, so that's okay. We've got time, you can read that.
Okay. So I'm going to delve a little bit deeper into farm environmental management plans in appendix N. As highlighted by Daryl previously, Federated Farmers does support the concept of farm environmental management plans as a way to facilitate and encourage the implementation of good management practices which will improve water quality. We do not support farm environmental compliance management plans, which, despite their name, is what we believe these plans really are, with Appendix N the way it stands. And I'd like to use health and safety regulation and the resulting on-farm plans and policies to highlight the difference. So this is a health and safety plan which is focused on compliance. The two folders are one plan from one farmer that lives down the road from us. This is a health and safety plan focused on keeping people safe on farm. Plans like this first one can cost anywhere from $1,000 to $4,000 to purchase. They usually involve minimal input from farmers, and they often sit on a shelf unused with very little relevance or impact on farming practice. The second one I showed you was produced by myself with input from my husband and our staff. It used some work-safe materials to assist when required, remains a living, breathing document, and heavily influences our farm practice. Both meet compliance requirements, but only the second one meets the intent of the regulation. Federated Farmers believes that it's necessary to pair Appendix N right back to the essential elements which will focus farmers on improving water quality outcomes on their own farms. Anything in Appendix N which is not focused on that purpose should not be a requirement. The vast majority of farmers are motivated and committed to improving their farming practice to improve environmental outcomes. And given the opportunity, they will produce an environmental management plan which will provide a roadmap to make continual improvement on their farms. But if they're required to produce an environmental compliance plan instead, the goodwill and the opportunity will be lost, just as it is by these big, costly health and safety missives. Further, if farmers are going to go to the effort of producing a plan which identifies actions they will take to mitigate the negative effects of their normal farming practice, why should they also be required to obtain a resource consent for that same practice? An environmental management plan should allow the resource consent process to be waived for normal farming activities, such as winter grazing and cultivation, provided it outlines appropriate good management practices which will mitigate the negative environmental effects. To use the health and safety example again, the only compulsory elements are an emergency plan, a hazards register, and an accident register. Other items, such as a policy regarding, for example, children on farm or contractors, are added if they're relevant to the specific operation. So in Appendix N, items such as mapping of subsurface drainage, heritage sites, overseer budgets, riparian planting, should be optional components of the plan, only to be included if they're specifically selected as key focus areas to mitigate areas of concern on an individual farm. So on our farm, We're a mixed farming operation which includes dairy support but not dairying. We're on a lignite marine terrace physiographic zone and are very targeted in our use of fertilisers, informed heavily by soil testing and with great care taken in application. Our biggest area of risk is sediment runoff. We already use minimum tillage practices for our cultivation whenever possible, and we'd love to purchase a direct drill to extend that practice. We've got a plan in place to work towards that, but the timeframe will depend on how soon we can afford it. Activities which remove us from our core business will suck up significant time that could be used far more profitably, therefore delaying our ability to purchase that drill. An accurate overseer model is impossible for our farming operation, so it would be a pointless exercise producing an inaccurate model to measure nitrogen outputs which are unlikely to be an issue on our farm, and therefore giving us inaccurate information that we actually didn't need in the first place. If we did determine that monitoring our N impact was a high priority, purchasing equipment to test the actual water quality leaving our farm may be a much better option than overseer modelling. If you regulate that we must produce an overseer budget because we have a dairy support component in our operation, you force us into environmental compliance instead of environmental management, a box-ticking exercise which will reduce or delay the improvements we could make to water quality outcomes. Overseer budgets are just one example of a compulsory element of Appendix N. For some farmers, this will be a worthwhile tool, so let them make that choice. For those of us who will not be able to make use of this, don't force us into it. Let each farmer focus their efforts on the low-hanging fruit and the biggest wins to maximise the benefits we can deliver, rather than forcing us to tick compliance boxes. So with that said, here's our overview for a revised Appendix N Part B, bearing in mind that the Appendix N should have a minimal list of compulsory requirements, plus suggestions for other optional inclusions. So property details should be limited to the address, the owners, and the list of resource consents. We believe the map of the farm should be optional to be included if it's useful as a planning tool for the farmer. Farmers could choose to include items that they find useful and relevant, such as the boundaries of waterways, planned cultivation areas, critical source areas, and other things in the list that are listed there in front of you. The good management practice section for each relevant aspect of the farm operation is the most important component of this plan, and the content should vary from farm to farm. So, for example, dairy farmers may include an overseer budget and waterway fencing. Beef farms might show a plan for waterway exclusion if there are waterways on their farm. For those undertaking cultivation, mitigation of sediment runoff if adjacent to critical source areas or waterways. Winter graziers should show sediment runoff plans, grazing management plans, waterway exclusion and setbacks potentially. A nutrient management plan will be very relevant for some. And crucially, the inclusion of any predetermined compulsory elements for a specific farm practice, such as winter grazing, should allow any resource consent requirement to be waived for that farm practice. Finally, there could be an optional section for future plans, such as planting, fencing and infrastructure. If you keep the compulsory elements to a minimum and allow farmers to make this a tool rather than a task, or to use the analogy from David Rose yesterday, a pathway to improvements rather than a Trump wall, it will be far more effective. That was all I had to say.
Just want to ask a question now, Mr. Sycamore. Does your attachment responding to the 42A report address Appendix N? I can't see it in there.
No, I don't think it does. It is just the select ones that I thought. I thought that Appendix N was in there, but it's not comprehensive. It's 20 pages rather than 50.
So I understood the attachment to your evidence was Federated Farmers' response to the 42A recommendations.
That is correct.
Right. But not in terms of Appendix N.
I thought it might have been in there, but it wasn't absolute, so it may not be.
Right, okay. So in its submission to us, Federated Farmers sought a different suite of changes to Appendix N that has just been outlined to us in this evidence. So does this evidence supersede and replace Federated Farmers' original submission?
As far as the variation, it's only minor. We've
yeah, I don't think this contradicts anything we said in the original submission.
That's not what I asked. I asked, does this tabled evidence supersede and replace the changes sought in the original submission?
Can I take it away and clarify?
Sure.
Thank you.
And it would be useful then if you could go back to the original, because this is a semi-judicial process, so we can't just make willy-nilly changes
sure.
to the plan. So Federated Farmers lodged an initial submission asking for specific changes to appendix N. You've now tabled some reasonably general evidence asking for what I think are different amendments to appendix N. So can you go back to the original submission and then provide us another version of the appendix N as per the Federated Farmers submission, which had strikeouts and underlinings in it, and do a further version which shows additional or different strikeouts and underlinings in a different colour. And then we will know that that evidence can replace what was in the original submission. If you're happy with that as a submitter.
Yep. We were here to try and give more focus on that area, because that's certainly one area from a farming perspective that we see needed refinement.
Oh yeah, no, appendix N is very important. That's why I'm asking you to do this little bit of extra work for us.
No problem.
Yep. Okay. Right, questions? Lloyd.
Just two, really. A number of submitters have actually said to us they don't like consents, and yet Mr. Fraser gave us a clear indication that the consent that he had on the table just earlier today was actually of great value to him, and suggested the $35,000 had a $1 million return effectively for his business. Do you still hold the view that consents don't add value?
Mr. Fraser's was a specific example. The consent itself doesn't give the value. What gives the value is that he is allowed to change his land use, whereas anybody who doesn't already have that going forward in those zones is no longer able to change land use. So from this point forward, if you don't have that consent, then there's no, the land use value has gone. I'm not sure if I'm clearly articulating.
I get the drift, but I want to take a little bit further.
Sure.
What I'm going to suggest to you, that even under intensive winter grazing, when you actually go outside of the permitted rules, to actually go through a process that should be clear and transparent, and you know exactly what you're going into before you go into it. You may have an idea of cost, you may have an idea of process, requirements for an activity. The suggestion has been that for some that they don't want that, and they push it away with passion, and others are saying, actually I want one because it actually gives value to the business. So I just want to get some clarity around, can a consent at the end of the day, when an activity has been agreed to between you and the council, can it actually give value through a process?
I think the fear about consents is that they can be declined. And if a consent for winter grazing, for example, is declined, how do I then feed my cows this winter? So that's the fear. Can we create the certainty, for example, through your farm management plan, that says if you do this, 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 and this, you can go ahead and do your winter grazing. But there's a real fear about, if I'm told I can't do that, then what do I do?
So to take it a little bit further, what is your suggestion that would actually help your farmers the confidence that they can actually go into that consenting process and actually come out with a fit for purpose? Because the consent effectively will give you a number of conditions. So if you meet the conditions, and you could argue that a number of those conditions are appendix N, as long as you meet those conditions, it should not be a straightforward process.
Is there a need, though, to involve the different departments, but the compliance department of Environment Southland in all of those winter grazing practices? Can the same certainty be provided by saying to farmers, you're allowed to winter graze provided you meet these good management practices? Why do we need to go through a consent process? Why do we need to pay rates to have people look at the level of detail for all of those places? If you could do a random audit if you wanted to, or if I actually think there's quite a lot happening at the moment. We've seen it in our own area where our particular farmer was engaging in some pretty poor wintering practice, and farmers themselves picked up the phone to that person and said, hey, that's not on, you need to stop what you're doing and sort that out. Like, I think there's quite a lot of self-management going on now. I don't see why we need to use up our rates to pay the council to make that happen.
Excuse me, I'm going to ask the question, and I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to ask it in a slightly different way.
Sure.
is there enough robustness in the proposed plan to actually deal with those farmers that you've just indicated to actually hold them to account for their farming practices?
I believe there is, because I believe that so much of the majority of farmers now are really engaged in this process. You see it now through the animal welfare kind of process, where if one farmer sees their neighbour or another farmer doing something that they just shouldn't be doing, they can ring the NPI hotline and report it, and then NPI can go and investigate. NPI don't have to issue a permit for every one of those farmers to have animals, but if there's instances reported where there's a problem, then they can go and investigate, and then they could do an audit on that farmer's environment management plan, you know, maybe monitor their practices for a period of time, that kind of thing. I believe involve that consent process or the compliance team for problems, not for everyone. That's my view.
Okay. My last question is around nutrient budgets and overseer.
Sure.
Do you see them as the same tool or are they two different tools? Nutrient budget. So what do you understand by nutrient budget?
Well, what I understand of overseer, to turn it around the other way, is that it's a tool that we can't use on our farm. So we do soil testing. We use that to inform, and we also use agronomists to monitor, help us monitor our crops and determine the right time to put nutrients on, so that we don't waste the nutrients. We can't afford to be wasting the nutrients. So I haven't personally done a detailed nutrient budget, but my understanding of what a nutrient budget would do is look at what can your soil handle, what can your plants handle, and make sure that what you're applying to your land is going to be used on the land and not run off as waste. Overseer, my understanding of Overseer is that it's a predictor of what would run off, but I know that in mixed farming operations and in operations that have crop rotations and things like that, it's not workable. So there's got to be another way to provide
this. Have you come across a tool called Mitigator, or are you aware of a tool called Mitigator that is meant to be released sometime soon?
No, I'm not aware of it, sorry.
There is Mitigator and other tools apparently that will take Overseer further and be more personalised on the farm.
Great.
So there are tools that the fertiliser companies approached us, told us about earlier on the process, that may help some of the farm perceptions around those sorts of things and give value to what you suggested is, I have a sediment trap or a pond or a wetland, and it adds value into that. Thank you.
You know, I think that was my same question. You see it here in your evidence that it was impossible on your property to use Overseer.
Accurately.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I should have added that word.
Yeah, that's quite an important discussion.
Sorry. Yes.
What paragraph is that?
11.
9. Which 9?
Oh, 4.
It does say an accurate Overseer model is impossible for farming operation. Yeah.
Yep. Already says that.
Yeah. Thanks.
No, I don't have anything else.
Great, thank you. Yeah.